It's up! And what a news day this one has been. Hello, everybody. I'm David Schuster in Connecticut, joined by the almighty Wozni Lombre. He is a writer for The Ringer and host of the Woke Bros podcast. Woz, how you doing?
I'm doing great. My cat keeps moving the mic, but I'm chilling.
If you see a dog on this end, you'll know that we've got both species covered. Woz, this was kind of a crazy, how everybody sort of, did you spend much time in Baltimore, Washington area over the past, couple of years?
I have not. I've only just driven through very briefly. I've never spent a lot of time in Baltimore, even as an East Coast native.
Yeah, well, I worked in DC for 15 years, and so I actually went on that bridge that collapsed today lots of times in visiting Baltimore, so kind of startling to see the news. So a lot of news about that. We'll also talk about what the latest with Sean P. Diddy Combs. Also, some interesting stuff coming up with President Biden going on the attack against Donald Trump with some things that should be a Biden vulnerability, but he seems to be turning around. So with that, let's get started with story number one. Recovery efforts continue in Maryland's Patapsco River after one of Baltimore's most heavily traveled bridges, the Key Bridge, collapsed. It happened shortly after 1:30 a.m. Tuesday morning. Emergency responders began receiving calls that a large cargo ship that had just left Baltimore's port was out of control. Here is security camera video. The footage has been married to emergency dispatch audio the moment the ship slammed into a bridge support column, triggering the collapse. Watch.
At 695 East, be advised, 13 persons possibly in the water. There was a 13-person construction crew operating on the bridge, possibly in the water at this time.
Six to communications. Are you advising there's 13 people in the water?
Possibly 13 people in the water. This the construction crew.
As you heard, officials feared that there were 13. There was a construction crew that was working on the bridge at the time repairing potholes. And so the immediate safety concern was for all of them that might have been dumped into the water. All of these details, and again, this happened just before 2 a.m. All of these details were about including attempted water rescues were widely available to the media by the time most of the media went on the air at 6 a.m. And this includes conservative media. And yet, conservative media repeatedly claimed that this mass casualty event was the fault of President Biden. On Newsmax, guest Nancy Mace of South Carolina, Republican, attacked the Biden administration for not putting more money into bridge maintenance.
You look at the spending bill we did on Friday, all the waste that's in there, things that the government should not be paying for when it could be going to things that are the government's purpose, like this.
Just like this. Well, again, this particular bridge came down not because of bridge maintenance issues or construction problems. It came down because it was slammed by a giant cargo ship. And yet, there was Nancy Mace. Well, for people who actually are concerned about transportation maintenance, irrespective of what caused this particular accident, here's something to keep in mind. The infrastructure bill the Biden administration passed with very little help from Republicans in 2023 provided $40 billion for roads and bridges. Want to know who voted against this infrastructure bill? Oh yeah, Nancy Mace, Republican from South Carolina. Now, not to be outdone, on Fox News, Maria Bartiromo, a host on Fox, then this morning linked the bridge collapse to border security. Border security, even though Bartiromo in the same breath seconds earlier acknowledged there was no indication that this was anything but an accident.
There's no indication of the nefarious intent in the collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge. The ship involved in the collapse of the bridge is 948 feet long, called the Dolly, a Singaporean flagged container. But of course, you've been talking a lot about the potential for wrongdoing or potential for foul play given the wide open border. That is why you have been so adamant. Why has the Republicans had such a hard time securing this border? The president says he's not going to take his executive action.
This is what we call in the broadcast media a hard turn. Nobody does it more strangely and with less intelligence than Maria Bartiromo on Fox. Now, back to the bridge collapse. Authorities say that 6 workers now remain unaccounted for and presumed to have died. President Biden says the federal government will pay to rebuild the Key Bridge and reopen the Port of Baltimore, which is one of the biggest in the United States. And in the meantime, investigators are now looking at maintenance and inspection records for the cargo ship that lost power. The cargo ship apparently had just departed from the harbor, was en route out of there when it lost power. It flickered back on and off. And that's when the ship was apparently going about 15 miles per hour, slammed into the essentially a key holding part of the Key Bridge, causing it to collapse immediately. There's a lot to digest here, but first, the idea that conservatives on anywhere at the same time bodies are in the water, and you know that, and you're trying to somehow blame this on President Biden, what gives?
It's just a lazy strategy. It's part of their playbook. Anything that goes wrong is obviously Joe Biden's fault. And obviously Joe Biden has never done anything right in the history of his presidency. That's the tack that they're going to take over and over. But I don't think we should expect anything better from the likes of Newsmax. Fox News, you might expect a little bit better than Newsmax, but not really by much, right? At least Maria didn't go out and say Joe Biden was steering that ship. She just pivoted to a completely different subject matter altogether. But of course, you know, our thoughts go out to the families who are affected, the folks who died. In a lot of ways, man, this bridge collapsing feels like a metaphor for the American state. It's hard to come up with anything that the state is involved in buttressing or maintaining that is in, you know, a sharp incline. Everything seems to be in decline right now. And it's obviously a truly sad situation up there.
Right, is passing the buck for everything that goes wrong and then taking credit for everything that goes right. And so with Nancy Mace, for example, from South Carolina, even though she voted against this particular massive infrastructure bill, she touted in her own district things that she says because of her somehow got put into the bill to help her district. So on the one hand, if she's blaming President Biden for not spending enough money to protect bridges, perhaps like this one in Baltimore, which got hit by the cargo ship, well, then Nancy Mace, by her own logic, maybe she should take responsibility for the bridge collapse, because clearly she took money away and diverted it to South Carolina that could have been used to somehow prevent this tragedy. That's how absurd all of this is. But what is it about Republicans who feel like they absolutely have to try to pull the wool over their own voters by taking credit for things that they opposed?
Because they know that ultimately the Republican Party's actual agenda is extremely unpopular. Deregulating the hell out of everything, giving unlimited tax cuts to the very richest people in our nation. That's not popular with even Republican voters. So they can't come out and stump for the things that Republicans, the establishment anyway, actually want to do. So they go this other route and they try to do a sort of cloak and dagger approach to what their policies actually are. And it's beautiful. It's typified most ridiculously by Mitch McConnell, who fought the freaking infrastructure bill tooth and nail. This thing finally passes and he goes to his home state, he's in his home state of Kentucky, and he starts bragging about the stuff that Kentucky's gonna get in said infrastructure bill. This is their approach. This is their strategy. It's ridiculous. And somehow they rarely ever pay the price for it.
Yeah. And by the way, I want to be clear to everybody, I've been in the position of having to anchor breaking news where you're literally just sitting on a shot of whether it's a train derailment or a crash, and you don't know anything, and you've got hours and hours to fill. And sometimes it's very easy to go into sort of the speculation. You put on all the engineers and the experts you can. But maybe you want to take the opportunity of, okay, while we're waiting for more information, let's go ahead and have a debate or discussion about policy. And I can sort of understand, I suppose, the impetus to say, okay, while we're waiting for information, let's talk about infrastructure in general. even though it seems clear that this was caused by a cargo ship. What is the likelihood of bridges being more vulnerable because of lack of repair, because of not getting enough money? There's an artful and a sophisticated way to sort of pivot in that direction, but to sort of make the hard turn and leave your viewers with the impression that, oh, this is President Biden's fault because there should have been more money in the bill, or because Maria Bartiromo wants to talk about border security along the southwest border having something to do with a cargo ship slamming into a bridge in Baltimore, in the port of Baltimore. I mean, that doesn't even make any sense. And I guess I'm constantly surprised was that you think that even whether it's Newsmax or Fox News, I mean, these are broadcast organizations with sophisticated budgets. You'd think they would have broadcasters who would show a little bit more panache, a little bit more skill in saying, okay, we're going to move away from this particular topic as we keep this live picture up for hour number five. And let's talk a little bit about some policy that may be a little bit unrelated. At least do something in terms of a transition that makes some sense, as opposed to being so herky jerky and amateurish about it.
Well, David, that's why we got outlets like TYT. That's why we're the good guys. You feel me? I don't know. They've been running this playbook of just outright cynicism, just the idea that their entire audience has been so right-wing pilled that they can't see or understand any of their deceptions or, you know, straight up out and out lies. I think they just go with that automatically on principle. And I'm not surprised by that. And, you know, not even just the Newsmaxes and the Fox Newses and whoever you want to get. I would say even in the mainstream, 20 years ago, David, this story would be leading the news for damn near 2 weeks. This is a calamity, a tragedy. We'd be figuring out how not to ever let this thing happen again. We'd be getting this thing right. Nowadays, I wonder if this will lead the news for more than a day and a half. And that goes for everybody. The big dogs who, you know, people claim that they're liberal to these sickos over on the right.
Well, the audience, certainly the attention spans have gotten shorter. And I wonder if all of this is sort of related to something you were talking about a minute ago. And that is there is a lack of trust now in institutions, a lack of confidence in the people who bring you the news. And that was evident even this morning, where on X or Twitter, whatever we're calling Elon Musk's social media platform, there was so much stuff that was spewing out from people who claimed that this was a government conspiracy, that this was an effort to somehow take attention away from some issue that Joe Biden had. In other words, to immediately, when people are literally having their lives are being lost, they're drowning, cars are in the river, the port is closed, it's a horrible catastrophe, as you point out, and people without knowing anything are out there sort of feeding this conspiracy narrative that, oh, this must have been the CIA, this must have been the government that did this, the Biden administration is trying to hide something. And yeah, I mean, this sort of stuff, I suppose it existed 20 years ago. People would come up with these conspiracy theories, but they were laughed out of existence by the mainstream media. They'd say, no, we're going to cover this and we're going to do a deep dive investigation into this cargo ship. And we're going to figure out exactly what happened. But it's so hard now to ignore the noise and the craziness that is out there from people who don't want to believe their own eyes or don't want to believe fire and EMS reports from the scene, but immediately want to somehow feed some kind of fan the flames of nuttiness by claiming this is all a big government conspiracy.
Here's what I'll say about the peanut gallery on Twitter, David. You don't make an anonymous profile with Elmo as your avatar in order to engage in measured, civil, nuanced discussion, debate, etc. You do that so you can let fly the craziest, most vitriolic nonsense that you can pull out of your butt. And so I'm not surprised by that in the least bit, David.
Interesting stuff. And again, as Waz was pointing out, condolences to everybody who was involved and all the families that were affected. And one can only hope that the divers are successful, at least bringing some recovery efforts there, and that people can get some answers as to why this cargo ship lost power and what happened. And of course, we'll probably find out sooner what went wrong with the cargo ship. Then we'll find out what has gone wrong, and we'll be able to figure out what has gone wrong with so much in conservative media, which wants to try to score political points and freakishly blame everything that goes wrong on the Biden administration. Let's go to our next story now.
Overnight, heavily armed federal authorities staging coordinated coast-to-coast raids at properties belonging to music mogul Sean Diddy Combs. Homeland Security investigations team seen descending on his multi-million dollar home in Los Angeles, going room to room and hauling away boxes. Across the country, more investigators swarmed the rapper's property in a wealthy section of Miami, appearing to carry out a laptop.
So yesterday, agents with Homeland Security raided two homes belonging to rapper music mogul Sean Diddy Combs in connection to an ongoing sex trafficking investigation. We don't know for certain that Combs himself was the specific target of the raids, but here's what we do know from CNN. Responding to reports of raids at homes belonging to Combs, the Department of Homeland Security Investigations, New York, confirmed it had executed law enforcement actions as part of an ongoing investigation. HSI is the lead investigative arm of the Department of Homeland Security and is responsible for investigating transnational crime and threats, including human trafficking. And other than confirming that the raids happened, well, the agency has been tight-lipped about the details of their investigation. But an anonymous law enforcement official confirmed the searches are part of a sex trafficking probe. Here's from NBC News. Homeland Security officials seized phones from Combs in Miami that he was scheduled to depart for a trip to the Bahamas, according to three law enforcement sources familiar with the warrant. Combs was in the Miami area when authorities executed the searches, sources said. Three women and a man have been interviewed by federal officials in Manhattan in relation to allegations of sex trafficking, sexual assault, and the solicitation and distribution of illegal narcotics and firearms, the source said. While it's not confirmed that Combs was a target, he has recently faced a wave of accusations of sexual abuse and harassment, all of which he has strongly denied. In November 2023, according to CNN, Combs settled a suit brought by his former girlfriend, singer Cassandra Cassie Ventura, who alleged that she was raped and subjected to years of repeated physical and other abuses by Combs. Since then, three other women have come forward with lawsuits in the Southern District of New York alleging that they were sexually assaulted by Combs. Two of the women said they were teenagers at the time of the alleged assaults. Combs was also accused of sexual assault and harassment in another civil lawsuit filed by a former male employee last month. Rodney Lil Rod Jones, a former producer and videographer for Combs, claims that Combs did not compensate him for his music producing work, forced him to procure and interact with sex workers, threatened him, and served alcoholic beverages laced with drugs to guests at parties at his homes. Jones alleges that some of the women that Diddy drugged were minors. In December, Diddy responded to the charges against him, saying, "For the last couple of weeks, I have sat silently and watched people try to assassinate my character, destroy my reputation and my legacy. Sickening allegations have been made against me by individuals looking for a quick payday. Let me be absolutely clear. I did not do any of the awful things being alleged. I will fight for my name, my family, and for the truth." So far, Diddy and his representatives have not commented on the raids, and his whereabouts are currently unknown. But on Monday evening, it was reported that his private jet had arrived in the Caribbean island of Antigua, although it's unclear whether Combs was on board at the time. Waz, what do you make of all this?
I will say this first to the viewers that for by all indications, people that I know that have worked in DC, have contacts in the feds. Generally speaking, they've been looking at you for at least 6 months, oftentimes up to 2 years and even more than that before they raid your crib and bring forth charges. We always hear the statistic bandied about that they have a 95% conviction rate when they do bring charges to people who don't automatically fold and take a plea bargain to haul themselves to jail. And so just to get that out the way, that seems to be how the feds operate. However, I would just like to see what the evidence is in the case before rendering a judgment myself. If all that's found to be true is that this guy facilitated the travel of willing sex workers to come to America and do what they do for their job, I don't know that this should rise to the level of Homeland Security. However, if women were forced here and underage women were forced here against their will, and maybe had been drugged, so on and so forth, then absolutely him and his associates should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. But I would encourage everybody To sort of wait to see what the feds have in store. Because a lot of times, I'm not going to lie, the feds be bored.
Well, I wonder if the open question about whether this was just simply, you know, trafficking, bringing in, you know, prostitutes across state lines and international borders, or something more significant, such as, you know, trafficking in minors. Maybe that's just an open question. And so as a result, the feds and the FBI decided, okay, we don't know the answer to this. Maybe they've asked for some cooperation from Combs so far and either haven't been satisfied with the answers or feel like the best way to preserve some of the evidence is to go ahead and get a warrant and go ahead and raid his property. So, and again, as you point out, I mean, sometimes investigators don't know at the time they conduct a raid. They may have certain suspicions about what they're going to find. Part of the reason they do a raid is to try to preserve evidence.
Yeah, absolutely. Perhaps this is a fact-finding mission on their part. And I guess we'll see where this goes, but we have to be serious here. The feds are fame whores. We know this. They love to go after prominent people if it could get their names in the press and, you know, what they call quote unquote career cases. This is how they've operated in the past. I've always had a bit of a skeptical eye of, you know, what law enforcement, especially on the federal level, are doing with our dollars. Particularly what they did in the war, quote unquote, war against terror, where they invented terrorists out of whole cloth, people who probably wouldn't have committed any crimes had they not been, you know, sort of coerced by undercover agents to engage in those crimes. And then quite recently, I don't know if you follow college basketball at all, David, but when they did this little fake scandal with these assistant coaches in college who were doing what? Getting kids lap dances on their recruiting trips and giving them, you know, $2,000 here and there to be college basketball players. These are the kinds of things the feds sometimes do, especially when they can get their names in the freaking papers. And so I, for one, am highly skeptical. But, you know, I don't put anything past a guy like Puff Daddy that he might, you know, engage in nefarious, even criminal behavior.
Given the tensions that have existed for years between a rap community and federal agents, federal police, FBI, is it possible that there's an element of that as well? That, aha, here's a famous black rapper, and we can send a message to him and to the rap music industry that there's certain behaviors that we're not happy to see. And oh, by the way, there's a political upside for the FBI because, you know, a lot of people, a lot of Republicans and people who control our purse strings in Washington who would like to see some sort of bust like this.
Yeah, it's interesting. I find it hard to go quite there, specifically with Sean Combs, because he's been so damn filthy rich and well-connected for so damn long. He's not some new up-and-coming guy who's like shooting people in all of his music and flashing guns and drugs and stuff like that on his Instagram live and things of that nature. This guy has been a bit of an establishment figure in entertainment for decades. He got his start in about 1988. So he's been at this for over 35 years. He's been a bit of a mogul for 3 decades now. So I don't know that this investigation would quite take that tenor. People can look up this guy, Casanova, the rapper from Brooklyn. The feds just put him away for like 10, 15 years on a RICO charge, which I thought was kind of dubious at best. But you know, that guy was a street artist, right? He was an up and coming guy. He was not as wealthy, as well connected as a Puff Daddy. And he got caught up in a RICO case and he's gone now, right? I doubt they would come after Sean Combs in that manner because he is so well funded. He is so well connected. This has to be something a little bit different in tenor from that.
Yeah, I also wonder if maybe because, I don't know, the political pressure that was on the FBI over Matt Gaetz, who engaged in alleged perhaps criminal activity, though wasn't charged for it, in terms of allegedly trafficking women across state lines, although apparently the woman, and it's unclear whether she was a minor or not, but because that was such a high profile case for Congress, you sometimes got to wonder if maybe internal politics at the FBI thought, okay, well, since we've pursued sex trafficking at a very sort of high level before, given the high level nature, at least the allegations that Sean Combs was involved in this, we have to do something here, even if it's just a raid, even if it doesn't go anywhere to criminal charges.
Yeah, you can't discount the idea that they're playing politics with this. I don't think you should ever do that when it comes to the federal authorities. Again, these guys are not opposed to chasing headlines. They have not been historically. And so that's definitely something to think about. But I would keep my eye on this and see what actual evidence comes out of this stuff.
Well, we appreciate all of you who are keeping an eye on us. I'm David Schuster with Wozni Lombre. Our show continues right after this. Let's talk some politics back with hour one, David Schuster and Woz Lombre. Donald Trump's campaign, 2024 campaign press secretary, Caroline Leavitt. You've ever heard of her name? Well, she's starting to make a name for herself for all the wrong reasons. She went on Kimberly Guilfoyle's show. You know, Kimberly Guilfoyle, she's the one who was perhaps engaged to Don Jr. Anyway, she went on Guilfoyle's show to discuss their next steps in fighting against election interference. Watch.
And we're going to play offense this time around. We're not going to play defense like we unfortunately did in 2020. We're going to have soldiers, poll watchers on the ground who are making sure that there are no irregularities and fraud like we saw in the last election cycle.
I love it. I cannot wait. It's going to be fantastic. And we do have to, you know, restore election integrity.
Soldiers? They're going to have soldiers on the ground, what, like parachuting from military helicopters? Or maybe she was referring to something else. Well, we know based on Donald Trump's previous statements, he's all for having some sort of armed guards, at least, or maybe his own sort of military at political events and at, of course, polling places. At his very first presidential debate back in 2020, President Trump encouraged his supporters to monitor Election Day polling places for instances of fraud. Donald Trump, quote, "I'm encouraging my supporters to go to the polls and watch very carefully because that was what has to happen. I'm urging them to do it. There was a big problem in Philadelphia. They went in to watch. They're called poll watchers. Very safe, very nice thing. They were thrown out. They weren't allowed to watch. You know why? Because bad things happen in Philadelphia. Bad things." Trump also went a step further than poll watchers and said he wanted to see the police at polling places. This was during an interview with Sean Hannity. Watch.
Are you going to have poll watchers? Are you going to have an ability to monitor to avoid fraud and cross-check whether or not these are registered voters, whether or not there's been identification to know that it's a real vote from a real American?
We're going to have everything. We're going to have sheriffs, and we're going to have law enforcement, and we're going to have hopefully U.S. attorneys, and we're going to have everybody in attorney generals. But it's very hard. I mean, you have some of these states sending them out like Nevada where they don't even have to check the signatures, so anybody can sign it.
We're going to have everybody at these polling locations. Well, everything that Donald Trump just said and what Leavitt, his press secretary, said, well, some of that could actually be illegal. CBS News reports, poll watchers are observers who are typically paid workers of a government organization such as state parties, the Republican National Committee, the Democratic National Committee, who observe polling places for potential issues. Every state has different parameters, but watchers usually must be registered to vote in whatever state or county in which they are operating. Now, poll watchers themselves are legal, but they need to be certified and approved to be at their state and local precincts. Again, from CBS News, watchers are not official election personnel who are in any way part of administering an election. They're acting in the capacity of helping to safeguard voting, making sure that everything runs smoothly. A poll watcher, for example, can notify election officials of issues such as long lines or a lack of poll officials at a site. Each state also has different rules and regulations for the number of poll watchers who are allowed into a particular precinct and also what they are allowed to do. However, the so-called poll watchers referenced by Donald Trump at the first presidential debate were not approved. In fact, no poll watchers from the Trump campaign, the Republican Party, or other Republican campaigns were certified to monitor the city of Philadelphia in 2020. It's also illegal. In all 50 states for civilians to loiter around polling places and intimidate voters. And that intimidation can include having firearms. Now, in terms of armed police and guards, according to the Voter Protection Program, private armed guards can be considered voter intimidation. According to CBS News, federal law prohibits any civil or military federal officer to order troops or armed men to polling places unless they are needed to repel armed enemies of the United States. And there's our answer. They're going to repel democracy. Isn't that what Donald Trump's really trying to do here? Isn't that what his press secretary is suggesting? That if we actually have a free and fair vote, well, that's a threat to Donald Trump. And therefore, he needs to have his armed guards, his own armed militia there to somehow enforce whatever Donald Trump, whatever outcome Donald Trump wants. Well, state and local law enforcement can sometimes be at polling places, but never under orders from the president of the United States or an ex-president. And they must always be subject to several restrictions. And again, also according to the United Democracy Center, states can constitutionally restrict weapons around polling places. 13 states and territories expressly ban weapons at polling places, and those laws have faced no serious constitutional challenge. The Second Amendment allowing restricting of guns, the Second Amendment allows the restriction of guns in sensitive places. So even though Second Amendment supporters like Donald Trump now want to have soldiers, armed militia show up at polling places, they have no case law supporting that effort. And in fact, in many places, it would be illegal. Well, it seems like to me, this is not about somehow keeping polling places safe or secure, or keeping them from being robbed by that lunatic on the street who shows up. This is about voter intimidation, pure and simple.
Yeah, I think you just laid it out quite beautifully, David, that this is illegal. I don't think these guys and gals in the Trump campaign brain trust, if we could even call it that, think that they're going to be able to do this effectively and quote unquote secure, you know, the polls in November. We know that's absurd. And if these folks do show up, police will be called on them and they'll probably be dealt with that way. I think the reason that they're going out and saying this is to just get the idea out there that somehow a result might be compromised. They just want that concept to permeate within, you know, the sort of thinking of right wingers and MAGA supporters. So I don't think these guys actually think they can execute this nonsense of guarding voting stations and polls. But, you know, they do want to get the message out there that this is somehow needed. This is somehow necessary because somehow the result might somehow be compromised by the dirty, nasty, cheating libs because they can't do anything fair and square. They're just gross and anti-American. And so our protectors have to protect us. And, you know, I think that's what they're doing right there.
It does seem like there's sort of a twofold effect. I think as you've identified, first, there is the, you know, get the message out in advance that we can't trust the outcome of the election because our soldiers will not be allowed to be there. Therefore, the Democrats are going to steal it and there's nothing we can do. That seems to sort of be the first sort of effort to make up excuses for a result that's coming that Donald Trump may not like. The second part, though, is this sort of chilling impact that it actually has on Americans who may be in, you know, cities or people who don't want to actually have to show up and walk past some guy who's wearing a Trump sticker and has an AK-47 strapped to his belt or is holding it. That is intimidating, and they don't want to have to deal with that when they're exercising their rights. So maybe they don't really care so much about Joe Biden, and it's really not worth the trouble, the heartache of having to sort of deal with this experience. So they're just not going to vote at all. And that seems to be perhaps part of the Trump strategy: depress turnout, particularly in Democratic precincts, and try to get people afraid of voting, whether this is fair or not. And it sort of gets back to the efforts we've seen in previous elections where, you know, the mysterious phone calls made to people telling them the wrong polling places or telling them the wrong date to go and vote, all in effort to try to suppress the turnout and the support of the Democrats.
You know, I actually think these voter depression efforts that the right has undertaken basically since 2012. After Obama whooped Mitt Romney's butt in his second campaign, they felt like, all right, we're not going to beat the Dems fair and square. They're going to cook us. We got to find a way to somehow artificially depress the vote. But I think those efforts, you know, these voter suppression efforts in the South and other places have backfired and have actually galvanized voters to come out even stronger, right? You know, churches and other places organize voter buses so that people can get together and go vote together as a community, right? And I think the more that they even talk like this, the more they're going to rile people up to want to come out even more and support each other and stand up in the face of what is obviously feeble intimidation tactics from a group of people who don't actually believe that they could win on the merits.
And what does it say? I mean, we started this particular story about Caroline Leavitt, who is Donald Trump's campaign press secretary for 2024. What does it say that she would go on Kimberly Guilfoyle's show and the both of them would talk about soldiers and use a sort of, look, there's, I suppose there's an argument one could make about saying we want everybody to be safe going into a very difficult environment politically. So we're going to, you know, make efforts to make sure that everybody has a safe way to get in and out and that there's no hanky panky and that everybody can make this a good experience. That's fine to say, but that's very different from saying we're going to have soldiers who are going to show up at the precincts. Yeah, what a great idea. Let's have militia. So, I mean, that is so imprecise and so buffoonish. And as you pointed out, as we've noted, it's against the law. How come a press secretary for Donald Trump and a possible daughter-in-law, the woman who's engaged to Donald Trump Jr., how come they don't know this? Or do they know it?
Well, to me, David, I think what you got to understand is these folks kind of understand their audience, which is a lot of people who masturbate to their gun collection. And so they do think of themselves as quote unquote soldiers in some war of tyranny against the government. So I think it's a matter of them actually knowing their audience more so than them actually having, you know, an organized, regimented group of people who are going to, you know, stand up and protect democracy.
Remarkable stuff. And we will see where this goes. What could possibly go wrong with having soldiers, with having armed men and women show up at a voting place? Yowza. Okay, let's take a little transition here.
There's the no average victim. Real estate investor isn't inflating the worth of their real estate
asset. You don't know anything about real estate, Jessica. You rent. Look at that building right there. Trump owns that building. Take a look at the entire Manhattan skyline.
Did you actually just say
Trump
that?
Trump owns all of these beautiful properties. He's built these things.
Oh, he actually said that. What do you know about it? You rent. That was a discussion about Donald Trump's legal woes on Monday's edition of The Five. Jesse Waters, as usual, ran cover for Donald Trump, but this time he insulted co-host Jessica Tarlov along the way, alleging that because she's a renter, she couldn't possibly know enough about real estate to comment on Donald Trump's financial troubles and financial fraud for which he was found liable. We'll get to the Fox segment again, but just in case any of you have forgotten what is it sort of at issue here, the AP reports a judge can order the former president fork over $355 million of his fortune plus interest, finding he lied for years about his wealth and financial statements he used to secure loans and make deals as he built the real estate empire that vaulted him to fame and the presidency. The frauds found here leap off the page and shock the conscience, Judge Arthur Engoron wrote in a 92-page decision that spares Trump's company from closure but forces it into years of court supervision, among other sanctions. Donald Trump now, so of course, Donald Trump gets the $355 million penalty. Initially, it adds up with interest to a bond that he would have to pay of $450 million. In order to appeal, that bond just got reduced, and there's a discussion about that, on $175 million. But at the moment, the penalty itself, $450 million, still stands possibly at the end of this unless it gets reversed. So that's the New York civil fraud case. In addition, in New York, Donald Trump has also been charged with 34 criminal felony charges of falsifying records in the Stormy Daniels case. That is the criminal case. Waters brushed all of that under the rug into the fire, calling the prosecutions against Trump a savage attack on a man because these people are mentally ill. Huh? Well, check out who's mentally ill here. Jessica Tarlov fought back and hit. Mark, about her renting her apartment. Watch.
They're just trying to attack him any which way they can.
Donald Trump has great, I mean, he thinks it's great representation. He is being given due process. He has gotten almost all of his requests from the Supreme Court down to the state courts.
Okay.
And what you just said, point? Beyond the incredibly rude way that you began about the fact that I rent my apartment, is basically giving him carte blanche to do everything from storing classified documents and flouting subpoenas and not returning them to fomenting an insurrection after he lost an election by millions of votes.
He's not charged with that, is he?
What I'm saying is there's no victims in any of these cases.
That's just flat wrong. And by the way, anybody who would sort of stick their hand in the neighbor's face on the set has got some serious problems, and that's a whole other issue. But aside from being entirely wrong on the facts, as Jesse Waters often is, and being wrong about Donald Trump and his crimes, Jesse Waters' elitist comment and his clear disdain for ordinary Americans should, in theory, also anger a lot of the Fox News core audience, right? Because about 30% of Americans rent. 32% of Americans rent. That's over 100 million people who rent. And a big chunk of them are Republicans. And they also care about high housing costs as well. According to a Morning Consult poll, 88% of Democrats and 75% of Republicans said it was important that the federal government address high housing costs that are contributing to inflation. So for all the Fox viewers who are out there who think that Jesse Waters is some kind of populist who cares about the economic challenges of average Americans, you should know that he is absolutely not. He is unhinged. He's clearly a sexist. He's very immature. And I don't know, I'm still surprised, Waz, that the show does as well as it does. I mean, maybe this is a deliberate effort by Jesse Waters to sort of play the role of the clown, knowing that, you know, the audience kind of likes seeing him get socked by Jessica Tarlov and kind of finds it sort of humorous that he acts so immature.
I believe people watch the show out of ritual. I don't know that people are getting out of that show, you know, their marching orders for how they should feel about the country's politics. It's kind of a morning zoo crew type of atmosphere up there. We often see some of the crazy sound bites that come out of that crew. But Jesse Waters, you know, he let his fangs show. He let it slip and show how he feels about actual normal people who have to rent, who don't own vacation homes, who don't have, you know, second and third properties where they're extracting rents and exploiting people. He showed a contempt for people who aren't part of that club and that class of Americans. So we shouldn't be surprised by the emptiest suit at Fox News, a walking, breathing haircut, that he would have these things to say about everyday normal working people, you know, who have to pay rent every month, myself included. I can't afford a crib in Los Angeles, David.
Well, speaking of empty suits, I will admit that it goes both ways. As I was telling your colleagues earlier, I actually own the house that I'm in now, but that doesn't make me any more informed or any more of an expert on real estate and real estate fraud and investment. That part. I still am lost on this stuff. And even though I have a monthly mortgage, but I mean, so the point is just absurd. And I wonder if it just sort of gets to, occasionally, I could sort of see there's a sort of towel snapping kind of vibe that comes across on the Five, particularly in terms of the conservatives, Jesse Waters and Greg Gutfeld, and how they interact with Jessica Tarlov, who's clearly smarter than both of them combined, smarter than everybody combined on that show. So they kind of razz her a little bit with a sort of immature kind of thing, because that's all they can do, because they can't win on the actual arguments.
Yeah, I don't think Jesse Waters is up there to present like some, you know, some nice, well-crafted opinion or argument. He's up there to be a smiling face for, and you know, he obviously understands there's always a role to play when it comes to groveling and being a Trump sycophant, particularly on Trump's favorite news station. And so he's playing the game. That guy's never had an original thought in his life.
Well, and to that point, I mean, Jesse Waters has already proclaimed that he is for Donald Trump, believes Donald Trump should be elected, wants to campaign for Donald Trump, even though I suppose that it goes against Fox policy of where their anchors and hosts should be. But in any case, the other part about it is you mentioned that he's not a very bright man. And the irony is that the person he worked for at Fox, who held that slot before him, Bill O'Reilly, for all of Bill O'Reilly's crazy conservative stuff, Bill O'Reilly is actually a very smart guy and was a very sort of logical thinker. And you might disagree with his arguments, but at least he had a compelling argument that he would put forward. Jesse Waters can't put forward any sort of compelling, rational, logical argument behind his thoughts. It's all these sort of little sort of side jokes and putting his hand up and oh yeah, whatever, and just sort of dismissiveness, which I find very off-putting. But maybe that's the way our culture has gone, particularly among conservative media, that it's really no longer about actually having conservative intellectual ideas and arguments. Now it's just about being a jerk. It's just about following Donald Trump and insulting people, even people who are sitting right next to you.
Yeah, I mean, the mainstream conservative politics these days, it's no longer like Milton Friedman and his, you know, his economic arguments about the power and the sanctity and purity of free markets and all of that crap that they were espousing when the conservative movement first, you know, sort of started going. Like, that's not the argument they're making anymore. It's just an argument of cruelty and anger and fear mongering. There's no basis. Like, they're not going to get up there and be like, oh, let's talk about how every single Republican wants to strip your granny of Social Security and Medicare tomorrow if they could. They're not going to do segments on that because nobody wants to hear that. That's their actual policy beliefs, but nobody actually wants to listen to them talk about that and, you know, try to give logic to that argument. And so they go up there and do stuff like this.
Yeah, I hear you. We're going to take another break and come back with a pretty interesting story coming up about Joe Biden trying to use what should be perhaps a vulnerability and actually putting it on Donald Trump. We'll do that after this break. And welcome back to the show. I'm David Schuster with Zeke Schuster behind me and Waz Lambre. So Waz, there's a strategy in politics in which people like to suggest you should take a vulnerability of yours and somehow put it on your opponent. And if you can do that, you have a better chance of winning. Well, President Biden's reelection campaign seems to be following that model now. They now appear to be ratcheting up the verbal attacks on Donald Trump. And in one of their latest broadsides, the Biden-Harris team labeled Donald Trump as feeble, confused, and tired. This came on Monday. An appeals court reduced Donald Trump's bond in the civil fraud trial to $175 million. The original fine of $450 million still stands, at least for now, but they reduced the amount in order for Trump to file his appeal with the bond money to $175. And in addition to what's going on in the New York civil fraud trial, there's the criminal trial with Stormy Daniels and the hush money case and the 34 felony counts against Trump for that. Well, Donald Trump is blaming all of this on Joe Biden.
This is all about election interference. This is all Biden-run things, meaning Biden and his thugs, because I don't know if he knows he's alive. And it's a shame. It's a shame what's happening to our country. This is election interference.
Election interference, says Donald Trump. Well, while he was in court on the same day, Donald Trump posted on Truth Social a message that he had received. It says, received this morning. Beautiful. Thank you. It's ironic that Christ walked through his greatest persecution the very week they are trying to steal your property from you. But have you seen this? Psalm 109, verses 3 through 8. They have also surrounded me with words of hatred and fought against me without a cause. In return for my love, they are my accusers, but I give myself to prayer. Yes, Donald Trump, by posting this, is comparing himself to Jesus. Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ indeed. The Biden campaign, amidst all of this, Donald Trump, and by the way, at the news conference that Donald Trump had, he also seemed to lose his mind a couple of times. He said something like, well, we can't have an election in the middle of the campaign season. He got confused. He made a couple of verbal stumbles. The Biden campaign then issued this public statement. Donald Trump is weak and desperate, both as a man and as a candidate for president. He spent the weekend golfing, this morning comparing himself to Jesus, in the afternoon lying about having money he definitely doesn't have. His campaign can't raise money. He is uninterested in campaigning outside his country club. And every time he opens his mouth, he pushes moderate and suburban voters away from his dangerous agenda. America deserves better than a feeble, confused, and tired Donald Trump. feeble, confused, tired. And by the way, during that news conference, Donald Trump at one point seemed to confuse the upcoming hush money trial of Stormy Daniels with the fraud judgment that he's already been hit with in the civil case. So he's just having difficulty keeping it all straight. Waz, is it too much from Democrats too soon?
I don't think so. I think one, Donald Trump isn't actually some incredible, like, spry young man. He just seems so in comparison to Joe Biden. So I think it actually is a pretty effective tactic to like be like, all right, yes, I am old as hell, but so is he, right? Like, it makes sense to actually point out the actual truth of how old Donald Trump is. But what I will say about Trump's Jesus comparison, maybe Stormy Daniels is actually Mary Magdalene in the Donald Trump Jesus story arc, guys. This is not as crazy as it sounds, Schuster. You should really look into this. He's had a few disciples, apostles, if you will, Rudy Giuliani and the like, you know, Manafort. He saved a lot of their skins too. So it's not as crazy. He's got a flock in the MAGA crew. The Jesus comparisons, I'm starting to see the signs here, David.
I'm not sure I'm going to believe it, though, and here's why. There's the stand, well, for all sorts of reasons, but first of all, there's the standard argument in politics. When you get good news, you never want to bury your own good news. You never want to step on positive news. Donald Trump got some positive news on Monday when he had this appellate bond reduced from $450 million to $175. And rather than sort of focusing on that, he goes on this, again, unhinged tirade about election interference and makes mistakes and verbal miscues, and compares himself to Jesus Christ. And so the argument is, well, people are not focused then on, oh, Donald Trump got a break from the court in terms of his appeal. They're saying Donald Trump is crazy. He's Looney Tunes. He's reposting a claim that he's somehow like Jesus Christ. That is crazy.
It's crazy, but would it even rank in the top 100 craziest things Donald Trump has produced from his social media alone? You know, not even from like his life as a person, as an entity, or as a one-time president, which still sounds absurd to say. Just from his social media alone, I don't know this would rank in the top 100, honestly.
Yeah. And by the way, pollster Frank Luntz, Republican pollster, who, you know, I'm friendly with Frank and respect some of what he's done through the years and disagree with other stuff. He was out there in the wake of the Biden campaign statement calling Donald Trump old and feeble and confused and everything else, saying that, oh, this is from the party that wants to, when they go low, we go high. And yes, there was a time in a different Republican administration, a different Republican presidential candidate, when maybe it wasn't necessary to sort of get in the gutter, but it just seems to me like Donald Trump is so far beyond the norm that you can't fight something like Donald Trump with the ordinary integrity that you might expect. That you have to throw back at Donald Trump the kind of nonsense, the kind of language that he is sort of throwing at you. And so in my view, I think it's wise for the Biden campaign, as much as they may put off some people who find it a little bit unseemly for Joe Biden to get engaged in calling Donald Trump nicknames or making fun of Donald Trump being feeble. To me, that's what it takes. And that kind of effort has to be done every day to make sure Donald Trump does not win.
Yeah, I reject the idea that this is them going low, especially in comparison to Donald Trump. That's absurd. If they wanted to go low, there's a variety of things. Say he has a small pecker, call him a fat boy, terrible spray on tan. I mean, like they could go low if they really wanted to. They haven't even done that. They're just pointing out an obvious truth about the guy. So I reject Luntz's even characterization of this is the Biden campaign somehow getting in the mud and going low with Trump. This is standard stuff that they're doing. They need to get lower, actually.
Yeah, I agree. And one of the groups that's helping them get lower and I think is doing an effective job is the Lincoln Project. They just put up an ad in which the entire theme of their ad was, you really want this man, Donald Trump's face, his voice, his drama on your screens all the time for the next 4 years. And they ran, you know, super clip of some of the crazy things Trump said and Trump sweating and looking terrible and looking, you know, with his crazy smirk. And as much as it may seem a little bit icky for people to think, oh, I shouldn't really base my vote on something aesthetically shallow as somebody looks, the fact is people do that. And if that's something that will help Democrats by saying, by reminding voters, you elect this guy and this circus does not end, and this is in your face all the time for 4 years. If that's what causes people to say, okay, heart palpitations, panic attack, I don't want that. I can stomach Joe Biden. I may not like him, but I don't want the chaos and the freakishness of Donald Trump for 4 years. So because of that, okay, I'm going to pull the lever for Joe Biden. That's a strategy. And I think that's a strategy that may pick up a couple of votes here, a couple of votes there. And in an election where you're talking about 50 or 60,000 votes across six states making the difference, that's huge.
Yeah, I mean, that's the name of the game, David. I guess we would like it for every single American to be sitting down and reading policy papers all day. But the fact of the matter is, people want to vote for somebody that they're attracted to. And, you know, Donald Trump is he's not that attractive. He's just not.
Well, something that I know we can all say and not get in trouble is, Waz, we are all attracted to you. Tell us where folks can find your writing and your podcast.
Big Waz on every single social media platform on planet Earth. So you can check me out wherever you decide to do your socials at. Check us out at theringer.com. And listen to the Woke Bros wherever you get your pods.
Waz, thanks for doing this first hour with me. I appreciate it.
Much love to you guys.
You can always find my stuff on Rebel HQ. That's on Facebook or YouTube. So search Rebel HQ. You'll find a lot of videos there. And every now and then when I'm lucky, I get to sit in on one of these shows on the main show on TYT. So that'll do it for the first hour. The second hour with Cenk Uygur and Jordan Ewell is coming up right after this. Thanks for watching, everybody. Have a good night.